Lead us not into temptation. Well, this is another bit of the Lord's Prayer where one part seems more straightforward than the other. Deliver us from evil. Yes, please, we can understand and appreciate that. Lead us not into temptation. Now, that, why would you want to do a thing like that? Lead us into temptation. Needs a bit of thinking about that. So we'll take the easy part first. Citizens of the 21st century should have too much historical awareness of our recent past ever to play down the reality of evil, dismiss too readily its dangers and its effects. From the wonderful century that brought us the Somme, Verdun, the Holocaust, death camps, Stalin and his purges, Mao Zedong and his vile cruelties, Pol Pot and the killing fields, the genocide of Rwanda, the misery of the Balkans, the gaunt children of Biafra, the unspeakable wickedness of Dunblane, we should have no illusions that somehow our times and generations are immune from evil and its effects. This is one enemy it is wise not to underestimate. History issues its warning. Humanity, know your limits, your frailties, and your poverty. And on the smaller scale, too many apparently indestructible people have been brought low, disgraced, and destroyed by evils various for us to attempt blasé in face of such power to corrupt and spoil. Indeed, a case could certainly be made that there is more opportunity around for evil in the early part of the 21st century than ever before, as the technologies conspire to make crime, violence, exploitation and abuse more global, more immediate and more accessible, control more sinister and pervasive. So much so that the cultural mood is one that not only tolerates much that is evil, because it's around, but also seeks to redefine it as not really evil at all. It's just a bit of fun. It's what people do. It's who we are. After all, it's only human nature. Wicked is redefined to mean great. And newspeak helps us in our denial, softens the edges of shame. And where the prevailing mood is big on being non-judgmental, where morality is personal and individually tailored to our own special designs, talk of evil and temptation seem hopelessly old-fashioned and quaint. And those dimensions to our humanity that are ugly and destructive, greed, violence, lust, revenge, self, these are shrugged off in a culture that seems to suggest that we are who we are and we can't really help it when things go awry. It's just one of those things, you know. Ours is a world in which it's hard to keep your integrity when all around are losing theirs. So that anyone seeking to live a different life, seeking a godly life, could come to imagine that they were the last virgin teenager in the world, the last non-drug user in the world, the last sober person, the last faithful person in all of Christendom. So prevalent is the culture of not taking too seriously those elements in us that are unworthy, demeaning, nasty and harmful. Listen, let's face it, we're all just a whisker away from the jungle. Our powerful appetites only just held in check by a thin leash of social pressure, scrape away the veneer of respectability, and we're all animals with the appetites of animals. So when drugs and pornography and greed are on offer, legitimised, no one can really expect us to pass up these exciting opportunities to pursue the pleasure principle. Now, can they? And all this works to draw us away from where we belong, where we are truly ourselves, to draw us away from God. That said, the funny thing about temptation and evil, the factors that tug us away from our prime loyalty to God, are not necessarily great crisis moments of faith and belief, great issues of commitment. It's much more likely to be mundane, simple things about timetables and responsibilities and opportunities to do good things, interesting things, useful things, to get away with the family, visit a friend, grab a bargain, clean the house, relax at your hobby, entertain visitors. These are the things that start the slippage, and in the end become more important to us than time with God, seeking his will, honouring his name, serving wholeheartedly in his church, witnessing to his presence in our story. It's kind of ironic the way temptation can work on us to draw us away from our first love for God, our first responsibility to his purposes for us. Tiny, imperceptible, incremental steps. Deliver us from evil can be the fervent prayer of the individual sorely tempted in some big way to some potentially life-destroying, heartbreaking mistake. It can also be a cry for help against the subtle intrusion of other gods into the relationship we ought to be having with God himself. The Lord's Prayer in this part does not ask God to remove us from the real world of choices and inevitable temptations. We're not called to live in a secure spiritual bubble safe from the seductions of real relationships and inviting opportunities. Escape, but not escapism, is sought. Help with the tough stuff is what we recognise we need. Constant vigilance to measure the extent to which the values of the world are making inroads into our thinking. Greater awareness of the dangers of the kind of destructive, appetite-driven behaviour that flatters our ego and destroys our character. But when the Lord is our constant companion, and his will our reference point, there is strength where on our own there would be weakness. God with us in the eye of the storm. If, like me, you live in the real world, you know how prevalent the presence of temptation and evil is, how fragile and vulnerable we all are. We sometimes just want to be left alone with no irritating divine imperative, just left to think and then act as we choose, like those who have no loyalty to God or to truth. Deliver us from evil. None of us is so big and strong that we don't need to utter this as our fervent and sincere prayer, a cry from the heart in face of our own vulnerability as we encounter the deluge of temptation and the countless outlets for evil in our modern world. There's nothing routine or abstract about the prayer, deliver us from evil. Yes, please, Lord, do that for me today, each day, because if you don't, I will stumble and fall. But what on earth can the first part of this petition be all about? Lead us not into temptation. As if God would contemplate such a thing. Quite enough temptation around without God taking us into the furnace. I was glad to find that many great thinkers have had to work hard to make sense of this phrase that people have been saying since the King James Version of the Bible was published. And of course that's actually part of the problem. Those who love the King James Version for its sweeping, colourful, majestic, ringing Elizabethan language have also to acknowledge that in 400 years the language changes and that the sense of a passage expressed in 17th century speak might not come across just as clearly for people in 2020. The early translators struggled to find an equivalent in Elizabethan grammar and vocabulary for the Greek word that sort of carried a couple of ideas within it. And the early translators opted to express it, lead us not into temptation. A decision which perhaps left us with more questions than we might have liked. Of course God would not lead us into temptation. What on earth could that be about? James, in his letter in the New Testament, makes it clear that the notion that God is somehow instrumental in our being tempted is a non-starter. He says, if a person is tempted by such trials, he must not say, this temptation comes from God, for God himself cannot be tempted by evil, and he himself tempts no one. He himself tempts no one. So what is the meaning intended by the original translation? Other translations come at it from a different angle. Do not bring us to hard trials. Let us not come to hard testing. And certainly the sense is implicit that it can be hard and full of risk out there in the world trying to live a Christian life, surrounded by issues, allurements, as well as just the rough and tumble of human experience, the unavoidable hard matters of disappointment, pressure, hurting, loss. who in their right mind would not want to avoid as much of that stuff as possible? Who would not pray with their whole heart for as straightforward a passage through life as possible, with as few storms and upheavals as possible? And maybe we can settle for that interpretation, translation. Lord, I know how buffeted and bruised we can be in this wonderful thing called experience. Please let my life experience be as calm and trouble-free as possible. Let my fragile faith not be put to the test by the severe rigours of life. Let life go easy on me today and every day. If we insist on sticking with the language of the 17th century, then we have to weave into that old style of language something of this meaning. Otherwise, we risk missing the thrust of the prayer. We can hold tenaciously to the wording of the King James Version because it's ingrained in our expressions of faith, and there's no problem with that. But we have to allow that for new generations, it seems a bit odd that we're implying that somehow the God who wants us to avoid temptation or deal with it effectively might consider deliberately laying it in our path, as if we couldn't find seductions enough of our own. And yet, in a sense, the whole issue of the existence of evil and therefore the possibility of temptation and falling has to be laid at God's door. He's responsible for everything, for the way things are, to the extent that he is creator and lord of all, and we can't hide from the issue that, in a strange way, evil is in the world because he allows it to be. He chooses to let it be. He could have done things differently, created a world, a humanity, programmed only for good, with a potential only to obey his will. Instead, he chose to put us as free men and women in a free and therefore potentially troublesome universe. Troublesome humanity within that universe, capable of wreaking terrible havoc. The realities of cause and effect cruelly cashing out the logic of life, the harsh and sometimes devastating truth that actions have consequences, and there is no safety net, no reworking the story. What happens, happens. The decisions taken carry the seeds of their own responsibility and possibility. Dangerous, but never dull. Wonderful and heady, this freedom, is it not, and terrifying in its power. So indeed it seems impossible to avoid the conclusion that by choosing to do things this way, make things this way, make us this kind of creature, God allows, leaves room for, the reality of it all going horribly wrong. The children he made turning into monsters, the world he gave so full of possibility becoming a foul cesspit. And this is why we have the Church of Jesus Christ, not the Church of Superman. When he sees two trains hurtling towards one another, Superman takes off his glasses, pops into a telephone kiosk, slips out of his suit, and flies to head off the danger. With his supreme strength, he brings the express train to a halt. Gee, thanks, Superman. God does nothing. He doesn't intervene in that situation, and people are outraged. Why did he not do something? Why can't God be more like Superman? Perhaps because his great gift, his greatest gift, is real life, real responsibility, real choice. And because we have real choices, real responsibilities, and live real lives, and we want to have real choices and embrace real responsibilities and live real lives, we need to pray that prayer and offer up it up to him each day that is so full of challenge and possibilities. Urgently engaging his presence and his power in our life to deal with the pressures, to resist the temptations, to deal with the cruel jokes that life can play on our hopes. Lord, in this beautiful, perplexing, awesome world in which I am placed, to be your child in my freedom and decision, rescue me from those things that would steal me away from you. And may I today not face the hard trials that might undermine my trust in you. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And we need to pray that prayer every day, don't you think? In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.